Because it's just, why is it getting dragged out?
The meeting will please come to order. Let the record show that all members except for Jenny Brantley are present, and I believe she has an official excuse. We'll have a moment of silence. The next item is acceptance of the agenda. Does anyone have any objections? No objections. The agenda is accepted. Any announcements? Richard? John? No. Susan? June? Matt? No announcements. Written communications? No written communications. Public comment. Anyone wishing to arrest the board? No one. Okay. The consent calendar, we have nothing. We have the director's report. I'm sure Wade can give us that.
Sure. Probably the biggest highlight, the only one I'll go into this week, is the Morro Bay Boulevard overlay project. You guys have all been probably driving up and down going, what's going on there? Most of the prep work is wrapping up at this point. There was a lot more commotion going on than we had originally planned. At the last minute, the gas company decided that they were going to get in there and do a bunch of work to replace all of the gas lines running down that section of pavement. So that's a good thing in that, you know, a lot less likely to have to come back later and dig it up. Nobody likes to see new pavement dug up. And so they've largely completed their work. The handicap access improvements have largely been completed. So grinding should probably start later this week. And then my guess is pavement sometime next week. So that project's coming along, should be done. That's their goal, is to have it done for the parade so that everybody can, marching in the parade, can walk down a nice newly paved street.
Excuse me. There's a fairly large void under the pavement. Does that mean there was a hole there?
Yeah, there was. Interestingly enough, Morro Bay Boulevard used to be part of Highway 1, and so it's got underneath the asphalt pavement, it actually has a section of concrete pavement. In one area where the gas company was doing their work, they found basically a void. It was like a T-shaped void, so it was an area, it looked like that somebody had excavated for their sewer lateral sometime in the past. They didn't really backfill it properly, and so that area had settled and left a void under there. The reason nobody noticed it is because of the concrete and then the asphalt pavement on top of that. It basically bridged or spanned over that void, so it didn't cause any kind of problem. It's been filled in, but it was an interesting little thing that we ran across.
I guess I have a question about the gas company's decision. Was the only place that they really dug deeper was right there by Bank of America, or was that a decision? Did they inspect the whole boulevard, and that's the only place that they decided to do?
No, they worked all the way down from about Foster's Freeze, which is on Pacific, all the way down. So they replaced almost every service down through there, and then were replacing the main if they had time. Yeah, do you guys have any questions you want to ask? That feel free.
Yes, I just had a question. The paving is from Kern all the way down to, is that Market Street where Dorn's is?
The overlay will stop at Main Street. So it'll be from Kern down to Main Street, and then it'll be a slurry seal from Main Street on down. So the difference between overlay is a real thin layer of asphalt. And a slurry seal is basically like an oil and sand treatment that smooths it out, but similar effect.
Thank you.
And I guess also, will we be going from Morro Bay Boulevard back down to Limos Ranch to Highway 1? I know we had talked about that earlier.
I don't think originally that was the plan, depending on what happened with the budget. My guess is that once we get through this, it's going to be it for a while.
I have another question, and I don't know if, Dylan, you can get to this. On the first page of the director's report, talking about recycling and solid waste, I know we just did spring cleanup week. Do we have any idea how much was collected, or do we keep track of that? I mean, because that could, I mean, for future years, because I know, I think we have one in the fall and in the spring of each year. That would be kind of interesting to be able to tell the public.
I would put money on Janine knowing that. I don't know that off the top of my head.
I have a response to that as well. I believe all that material that's picked up during cleanup week, though, does go to the landfill, correct? It's not recycled?
That would be my guess.
Yeah. So if it's not there, it would have been in the trash. I was reflecting about that, and I thought, I wish there was some type of a preliminary pickup, say, organization like Got Junk, who could come by and pick up things that were worth something that could be resold or reused in some way instead of all of it just going to the landfill. I know it's not good to have it sitting around people's property, and the goal is to get it off the property so it's not a fire hazard and that kind of thing, but there are better ways to get rid of things than just landfilling it.
One thing I would add to that, June, because I know Cold Canyon, they do have a pretty good system of separating out the trash, the appliances and whatnot. It would be interesting if we could contact, because they probably do those spring cleanups for other municipalities, ask them what they collected, if we could keep track of that, because they do separate out a lot of that.
Well, actually, I worked out there for many years, and if it comes as garbage, no one sorts through it. It goes straight to the landfill. If a person, a private party, comes in with a truckload of material, they have the option to landfill it or take it to the resource recovery park where there is some separation of material. But in general, I'm sure what the garbage company picks up on spring cleanup day is direct to the landfill.
I had a question. Excuse me. On the bottom, are we down there yet? On the part about the Harbor Walk project?
Yes.
Oh, could you just clarify for me and for us what the parking lot reworking entails? What is that? Is that the first parking lot down by... just explain it to me. I'm not sure.
Sure. It's everything between Beach Street, effectively, and about GAFCO. So it's sort of the last triangular piece as you come on down through. The improvements that we were going to do were some lighting improvements, so we were going to relocate the lights that were in that parking lot and then slurry seal it and restripe it. So it would have basically changed the layout a little bit is what's left undone.
Thank you.
Well, Dylan, there's a... on the second page here, they're talking about council adopted resolution to support the Adopt a Tree program. Formation of a tree committee will still need to be approved by council. Now, historically, you know, the original tree and street committee was part of PWAB. That's what became, PWAB became a consolidation of three different boards. Now, are they going to run that independently of PWAB, or is it going to be part of PWAB again? And the same thing goes for the Adopt a Tree program. That came out of PWAB originally.
Correct. I know you guys have done some work on that front. I think what this is referring to the results of those labors. I think you guys wrote a letter to council requesting some ability to work on this, and that's what we're referring to here. June, do you want to?
Actually, it was very specific about a tree cassette. Tree committee being a subcommittee to PWAB, and as I understood it, the only thing that needed to happen was the council had to approve it. So I wasn't there. I didn't hear exactly what happened, but I was surprised that it wasn't approved and that they broke apart the Adopt-a-Tree plan, because that was intended to be part of the tree committee's project work. So maybe you could explain to me what happened with the tree committee and why it wasn't passed by council. Will it be back on their agenda? Do they need more information from us, or where it's supposed to go from here?
You know what I think we probably do on that is I'll ask Rob to bring you guys an update, because that was his item that he shepherded through. So I'm not really familiar with it. So I'll take a note and ask Rob maybe for the next meeting to bring you guys an update on where you stand on that.
Dylan, I have a question on page 3. On the State Water Project, I see that our statewide delivery is 20%. And that's going to be for, is that for the calendar year? I know last it got lower and went down to 10% a few months back. Now it's at 20%. How is that updated, when and how long will that be?
The way that they usually do that, it is for the calendar year, so it's calendar year 2009. They usually make a prediction somewhere in about November and start kind of throwing some data out there for the water users and say, okay, we're thinking it's going to be about this much this year. Usually when they make their predictions, they start low and they hold low. So your first prediction is usually your lowest one. It's been very rare that they've ever started at a place and then had to cut back mid-year. So at this point, we started the year at 15%, and then last month, ballpark, they bumped it up to 20. So for the remainder of this year, we'll get 20% deliveries rather than 15%.
Can you give us some idea how they determined that we needed to go to a higher percentage than we were in the past? Because I think most of last year it was about 15%.
Last year was more than 15. It was 15 for the beginning of this year. Last year, I believe, was 30%, if I'm not mistaken. No, they go through some predictive models. Their goal is to maximize that delivery to the extent that they can. There are a few issues that are constraining that, one it being a drought year. So they look at the snowpack, they look at the projections, reservoir storage, and try to make a determination about how much they can deliver. And then, two, they're constrained now by there's a judge's decision regarding the Delta smelt about how much they could pump and when. And so they've revised their model to reflect that. But that's something that DWR goes through and makes that projection and then provides those deliveries.
So that number really isn't a reflection of our demand? It's more of what they're capable of delivering?
Correct. It's absolutely the only thing we're guaranteed with State Water is to get a bill. We're not actually guaranteed to get any water out of the system. And so you go, it is based only on what they believe they can supply. It has nothing to do with demands or requested demands. So they deliver what they can, and then you get to work it out on the supply side in your own community. So there's a lot of communities right now in Southern California that have we're fairly fortunate because we have a fairly substantial drought buffer. And so that protects us and lets us get most of our water supply even in these shortened years. This year we're also accessing, the county has additional allocation that they've made available to us through a reliability program. And so because of our drought buffer and then the excess allocation of the county, we're actually able to get pretty close to full deliveries this year, whereas a lot of communities are stuck at that 20%, and they're getting 20% of what they were counting on. And so it's a really tight water supply year throughout the state.
Well, our drought buffer gives us 60% then, doesn't it? And we have 2X on there.
Yeah, we have approximately two times. So the way that it works is we have our water allocation of 13 acre-feet, and then we have an additional drought buffer. If I remember the number right, it's 2290. Don't quote me on that one. I'd have to look it up to be exactly correct. So what that does for us is we get protected in our deliveries all the way down to about 33%. So if the delivery year is a 33% or more delivery year, we get all the water that we're contracted for. When you drop below 33%, then we start to get cut pretty severely every percentage point below that.
Yeah, well, that drought buffer came through PWAB here at one time, too.
Correct, and it was it's really made our local supply situation more reliable than a lot of other communities face.
So another question that goes along with what June and Bill are saying is, with our potable water production, are we getting consistent performance out of our wells? And then that goes into the state water projection, because I notice we say how many feet that we're getting from the wells and how many from state water. So I'm just seeing, is that consistent?
The ability of the wells to produce water is fairly consistent. So you go in time, those drop off a little bit. When you build a brand new well, maybe it produces at 220 gallons a minute. In a few years, over time, that'll soften some. It might soften to like 200. But you go, our wells are fairly good producers. What constrains us more is basically how we operate those wells and when we operate those wells. So we don't run those wells 24/7. We operate them sort of intermittently to peak off the state waters, how we're using the wells right now.
Does that supply fluctuate seasonally at all, or not because it's underground? So?
No, it can. We have some constraints on our wells and the usage of our wells. So most of the wells in the Morro Basin we can't use directly into our system because of the high nitrate levels, and so we'd have to run it through the desal plant. So the Morro wells, we pretty much run them just enough to do the sampling that we need to do, and then we actually use them for production during periods when we don't have state water, and we're running them through the desal plant. The Choro wells, we have water quality issues in Choro as well. So we have nitrate levels. We have some constraints on those. The state's told us not to use some of our wells in the Choro well field. And then we have creek flow requirements on our water rights. So there's a bunch of constraints that go into the use of these wells. And what we do operationally is, sit down at the beginning of the year and try to map out a strategy for, we know approximately what our demands are going to be throughout the year. They are somewhat weather dependent, the demands that we have are. But we try to map out a strategy. So this month we're going to use this much state water, and the rest we're going to make up with these wells. This month we're going to do this, and we kind of map that out and then try to hold to that pretty closely.
So you do that month to month, that mapping out process?
Yeah, but our actual operational decisions are more frequent than that. So you go, our state water deliveries, we try not to vary them too much, and there's a maximum amount. We get constrained on how much we can receive. So what we usually do is we operate and try to get that maximum amount of state water, and then we use our wells at basically high demand periods. So here in the weekends, you can have higher demands because of the visitor load, and so it's often that we'll run the well over the weekend kind of thing.
Another question further down on the water page, the third or fourth, the desal plant. Can you give us an update on the desal plant, the new membranes, and how that's all going and when it's going to be doing?
It's going pretty well. The system's been installed, plumbed together. There are a couple leaks that we found when we flushed some things out, so we'll do a little bit more work. That'll probably be wrapped up next week would be my guess. So the physical installation will be complete next week. We have ran water through those. We have flushed them out. So technically, they're ready to go. What's constraining us right now is the revision to our water supply permit. So we have to go through the California Department of Public Health and revise our water supply permit because we're bringing in a new water source online. And that's a fairly paperwork-intensive process. And so really most of what's constraining us right now is just my ability to grind through the paperwork. So in the next weeks, months, we'll get through all the paperwork that we have to get through. Once we have buy-off from them, then we can actually run it into our system. So we're really ready to go right now. It's got electricity to it. It's all plumbed up. We're ready to fire it up. We just really are waiting on that approval.
Does that mean, like, by our high peak or high usage during the summer months, that's who should, if you're thinking theoretically, it could be done by then?
Yeah, that's the intent, that if we got into a pinch this summer, we would be able to use it, and certainly it'll be 100% complete in time for the shutdown in the fall.
Along the same lines of water supply, I was noticed here that the Cleath report, you have the draft of that now, and it's under review, and it says that once you've reviewed it, we'll be seeing it next. And I don't see it on our future agenda items, so I was wondering if you had any idea when we might be seeing that Cleath report.
I didn't put a date in there, only because that gets run around at the city. Everybody gets to kind of take a peek at that and go through that administrative draft. I've gone through the report. It's waiting on some others right now who are reviewing it. I don't know how long it's going to take them to do that. They're not an easy read. And so we go through and, look for errors or omissions that we think are in there. We'll kick it back to Cleath. He'll do a final report. And then the final report will come to you guys. It'll go to council for adoption. And then we'll also present it to the users out in the watershed. We'll take a little different tack than we did on the last one. We'll try to get a more sort of public opening of that document and let everybody review the information that's in there. And that should be coming in the next couple months.
Great. And then will the public participants, the people that are involved, have the opportunity to come to PWAB during public comment? Will they see the report before it actually comes to PWAB so they have an opportunity if they want to come and ask questions, or would they be going to city council meeting?
I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do that. Whether we bring it to here first or to city council first, you have to post the agendas usually 72 hours in advance, and so that would get some advance posting there. What I anticipate that will happen is we'll put it up on the website as soon as we have that final version and make it available, and then we'll go the rounds through PWAB, through council.
My concern was that the public would have the opportunity to look at the report before it comes before a board, where they would have an opportunity to respond in public.
Yeah, and I can guarantee, because it is the way that we do our agenda, is the public always has a chance to see what's on our agenda before the meeting, right? We have to do advance preparation.
Well, but 72 hours, like you said, is not much to go through. What you just said is a very complex report. So I
Correct.
Guess I was asking, will the public, people that have already been involved in this process, be receiving the report and notification of its availability, you know, with plenty of time to review it before it comes before a board?
It's let me make sure I word this correctly, but before it becomes an official city document, it has to be adopted by council. And so you go until it becomes an official city document. Publishing it is not always the best thing to do. So we will provide some advance time. I don't know how much that's going to be. I mean, I guess ultimately we'll try to get on there as early as we can and give as much time for everybody to review it as we can before it comes to a meeting. But that may be a week, it may be 2 weeks. I'm not, you know, promising any specific timeline on that.
I hope that people are given as much notice as possible. And I don't know what the procedure is, but, you know, people have come before this board already that are involved in this. And are they notified in any way, or is it up to them to be checking the agendas every time?
It's safe and fair to say that those parties that have an interest in this, so you go, in my mind, there's 11 water customers out there. Really good chance that we'll meet with those 11 water customers before the report even goes public, mm-hmm. because they have a specific interest. The people who provided samples to us from their wells already have those results, or should already have those results. So you go, they are fairly aware of what's coming. But, yeah, they certainly will be some kind of advanced meeting or notice for those parties.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anybody else?
Yeah, skipping down, Dylan, on page 3, I'm talking about the backup generators. Can you, we're going to have a – CA is talking about finding a – on the bottom of page 3. A pre-manufactured light tower that would have a sufficient power. This is a backup generator. Now, is this generator, this backup, is to run city operations, or is this one that would be running the pumps and various lift stations if they went out, or is this, or anytime the city needs a backup power source?
Yeah, this generator was specific to the water department. So the intent was we were looking at one of our booster stations that we wanted to run with this, and trying to find a light tower that was big enough to do that. What we found is that the standard light towers don't have enough oomph to run our booster stations. So you go, in this regard, we basically are going to have to buy a generator that's big enough to do what we needed to do and then retrofit it with a light tower. But this would be specific to the water department. If the water department didn't need it or wasn't using it, then it would be available to other departments. But so, for example, we had the big power outage last night. We can go for a while in the water department because of our tanks. We can go for a while without needing to put generators on. But in an extended or protracted power outage, we would need to have some way of moving water around the system, which is why we have these generators.
Do we have any idea of cost on this, or is this still going out to bid?
Yeah, we've sort of left it. We thought we could find a pre-man unit that would be easy to put together. This is one of those little projects that's just going to sit there probably indefinitely until one of us has some time to work on it.
Now, I know you were dark there in Public Works yesterday all afternoon. So this backup generator you're dealing with does not cover that kind of power, I take it.
No, we had a project in the works that would have provided, it would have been a stationary generator. These are portable generators.
That's what I thought you were working on.
We did have a stationary generator project that would have provided power to Dial-A-Ride, City Hall, and Public Services buildings. Council elected to, on their Monday night council meeting, they elected to basically terminate that project for budget reasons. And so we've stopped work on that project.
But you managed yesterday with all that. That power went out about, what was it, 2:30? And it wasn't on till sometime during the night down here, was it?
Correct. And
you managed to survive yesterday through on those lift stations and all that?
The lift stations got through. That we may have provided, I didn't check with my guys if they provided power to lift stations. I know they're out there checking them. So we had a guy basically standing at each lift station keeping an eye on it. The water system, I know we didn't use our generators. I'm not sure on the lift stations whether we used them or not. Public services and City Hall, I know City Hall basically closed up shop and sent people home because they couldn't do their function without power. And when the phone system that we have also needs power to operate. And so you go, you know, if you tried to call City Hall or Public Services yesterday, you could have been very disappointed. Or if you had a ride from Dial-A-Ride and hadn't scheduled your return trip, you could have had an unpleasant walk home in the wind. So just something to keep in mind.
Any further?
Yes, I have a question on page 4-4, talking about lift station number 3. The catastrophic failure, as you're listening, can you go in and explain that, what was done, and so on?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about that. So what happened, I'm not sure that we ever diagnosed exactly what happened with the pump that failed. But we had a seal go out on that pump. So what happened was our collections worker got a call, I think it was about 1 in the morning, that there's a problem at the lift station. So he goes out to the lift station, opens the lid to crawl down and figure out what's going on, or to look down in there, and sees a rising water surface, which is a horrible thing because our lift stations are designed as a wet well and a dry well. The dry well houses the pumps and the electrical components that those pumps use, and that dry well flooded. So it was a fairly unpleasant event at best. Our crew member called out reinforcements. The whole crew showed up. They worked all night using our Vactor truck to keep up with the flow coming into the lift station. So they basically worked themselves silly kind of thing, pumping that down. They pumped down the wet well and the dry well enough so they could get in there and close the valves between the wet well and the dry well. And then they were able to pump out and clean out the dry well. After that on Saturday, so they worked through the night on Friday night. On Saturday we got down in there, pulled out the pumps that were damaged, put in one of our spare pumps, but the electricals were all damaged, so we had a local electrician come out and basically rig it back together where we were able to limp along on one pump. So that's pretty much what happened. We had a failure in a pump seal, flooded the dry well, damaged the pumps. We were about 2 or 3 inches away from hitting the main breaker in the electrical panel, which could have been a very spectacular event had that happened. But as it was, it did cause some damage to some of the controls and other devices in that lift station. So over the weekend, we just basically cobbled it back together, and they got it operating again. And then actually tomorrow, we're scheduled to get in there and to get it put back together 100%.
Well, lucky then that the crew was there to do that. That's very commendable. Was this a matter of just a fluke, do they think, or was this a matter of old pumps, or just the seal went?
You know, when you deal with older equipment, your probability of failure increases. And so you go, that's one of those things that you get to a point where your equipment gets so old or so past its useful life that you really are just constantly chasing your tail. I don't think that was necessarily what happened. It was one of those things that a pump seal broke. It broke in an odd fashion. Usually you have some warning on those before they break. So we're looking at this one more as kind of like a fluke. But as that lift station gets older and older, it becomes less and less reliable, and these things are more and more likely to happen.
Isn't that pump station due to be replaced sometime in the near future?
Yeah, we're working on the design of that right now. Lift Station 2 is probably still our highest priority because of where Lift Station 2 is located. It's a higher priority than Lift Station 3. And then Lift Station 3 is our second highest priority. So we want to get to that as quickly as we can.
So the funding is in the budget to replace those pumps?
Correct. Mm-hmm. We've actually allocated sufficient funds for design already, and then our next step would be to prepare the bid package, send it out to bid, and then council would award that. And there are sufficient reserves in the sewer fund to cover that expense.
I'm curious, when you say they were pumping all night, are they manually in that hole pumping?
The way that it works is they use a Vactor truck, and so you go, but our Vactor truck is a very small tank. So you pull up, and they quickly set up the hoses, pump until they fill up the tank on the Vactor truck, tear it all apart, run and dump the Vactor truck, and then come back. So it's a very labor-intensive process. The crew did a really good job, and they should be commended for their efforts. They actually kept it from spilling, so we didn't have a spill, even though we had a catastrophic failure of the lift station, which is very commendable. So, and that was basically pure old-fashioned hard work that got us there.
And the fact that they knew about it is because those pumps are alarmed, right? So,
correct.
And there is someone on duty pretty much around the clock in case of an alarm like that. Is
correct.
That right?
So our on the water crew and the collections crew both maintain a standby person. So there's always somebody who's got a phone in his pocket that's available to respond. And, you know, they are on duty.
So it sounds like all the systems worked the way they were set up to work.
Yeah,
in addition to all the extra effort that they made and good job they did on it.
Correct. As bad as it was, because of their quick responsiveness, they really kept it from getting very bad. I mean, had we soaked the main breakers in the panel, it would have caused a lot more damage and been a lot harder to fix. So yeah, their quick responsiveness and then the fact that they are on duty that way, that's why we do that.
Great.
Well, I would just like to say yay, crews. And thank you for avoiding catastrophe because, you know, I, for one, am very glad for that. So I'm glad everyone was on top of it. I'm sure everyone else is, too. But if we're through with that, could I just come back to the trees?
Sure.
All right. And just as a reminder that February 1st to June 30th is nesting season and no trees within the public right-of-way shall be trimmed or removed. I hope people know that because sometimes I see it going on and I'm not sure if they have permits for emergencies or not on private property.
I wanted to emphasize that.
Thank you.
Time frame also applies to private property.
Correct. We can't constrain tree removal on private property. This is our ordinance pertains only to trees in the right-of-way. But we encourage people on private property to respect that season. Why not just wait?
Well, it says here similar provisions also apply to trees on private property. Is there a clarification needed on that?
I wouldn't know that ordinance well enough to quote it off the top of my head.
I'm thinking I heard that there was some
ordinance
that does pertain to public property. The city may not enforce that very actively, but I think it is on the city codes.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for bringing that up.
That finishes that?
No. That finishes that.
Well, June's looking. Dylan,
go ahead.
Well, sorry. Maybe a couple more. Dylan, can you give us an update on the fire stations?
Sure. The first phase of the fire station is effectively complete, has been since about November. There are a couple little issues. Some warranty work was done, so you see a backhoe over there. We did some warranty work. That'll be wrapped up this week. So the first phase is pretty much done and done. The second phase, they're chipping along. They're in the design phase. So they're working on, the firemen are working on, you know, what type of alarm system do they want to have in their facility. They're looking at, starting to look at some of the finish options that they want to have. So they're moving right along on the design of that second phase and hope to be there sometime later this summer.
So then does that mean that construction or ground breaking will start by the end of the summer?
At least out to bid. And then construction follows shortly thereafter.
Given the economic woes that the state and the country are in, are we going to be affected by this, or have we built this in to accommodate this?
I know that this is, for the city council, this is one of their highest priorities, is to get the fire station completed. That's one of their top five goals, is to push this through. So right now we're in the process of applying for a USDA loan, and those are reduced interest or ultra-low interest loans. It looks like we're set up to get that, and then that's how we would finance that construction.
I've got just a subject that I'd like a little clarification on. On page 2, there's two different mentions of bicycle activity going on in the city. One is a city council directed staff to prepare a bicycle transportation plan. That's up at the top. And to return to the council within the plan within 3 months. And then at the bottom, it talks about the North Main Bicycle Project, which has been included in SLOCOG's work program. So I wonder how those two interface, and also if you could give a little bit of detail about what the North Main Bicycle Lane project entails, location, time frame, what's going to happen there.
Sure. I'll take a crack at them. Rob would be a better person to ask about these. The bicycle transportation plan, what that is for is that we basically go through and review. We create a plan of how we're going to move bicycle traffic through the city. What that adopting and certifying that plan helps us become available for more bicycle-type funding. Mm-hmm. So that was why they put a tight timeline on that. It's basically get this plan together, get it ready, in an attempt to get some funding. And the good news is that we were included. The North Main project was included in SLOCOG's work plan. So basically we rose to the level that they said, hey, this is a regionally significant project. This is a project that we would like to see. And then they'll put it on their list, and when they get the opportunity to, they're likely to fund that project. Let me continue. So what that project entails, though, is effectively North Main Street. So I'd say from 41 north.
To the north end of town?
Towards mm-hmm. the north end. Mm-hmm. And the intent of this project is to get a bicycle path down through there. It'll entail a fair amount of work. It's not just painting a stripe on the street, because the street isn't wide enough in every location to accommodate that. So there's the ADA access improvements that would need to be done. There's some widening of the street and spots that would need to be done in order to get this bicycle path down through there. And that's really what the project is, though, is the intent or the purpose is to get a bicycle lane on North Main Street.
I know that there's also a project coming up by Caltrans to replace the fencing in that same area. Has there been any attempt to maybe coordinate the two projects for efficiency?
I know Rob Livick's been involved in both of those projects. The Caltrans beautification project is within there right away. So there won't be a whole lot of overlap as far as the work that's being done. But I know that Rob met with Caltrans, talked through him on that beautification project. So he'd be aware of that and schedule around that.
And it looks like SLOCOG may make some funding available for that project. Is that in the works, or that's a definite go? Or
no, it's not. It's not that firm at this point. So they've put it on their work program, which means that it's a project that they're going to continue to consider. But the funding, everybody's got limited funding, and so they build a work program, they put projects on there, and then every year they go through and review that work program and select certain projects that are their highest mm-hmm. priorities to fund. So I don't know that there's been any kind of funding commitment on this as of yet, but we are in sort of the queue or in process to line up for funding.
Is that something new that we're in the queue?
That's fairly recent. That was in the last few months.
Great. Did we have to submit some type of plan for the North End bike
Correct.
Trail in order to get
Correct.
In the process?
Yeah, we had to submit a project description, and I don't know what other exhibits were prepared for that. But, yeah, you submit a project description, kind of describe what your project is and what the intent is, and then they've selected some of the projects that we submitted they weren't interested in. But this was one that did make the list, and that happened probably 6 weeks ago.
Great. Glad to hear it.
Everybody satisfied? We can move on? Okay. Now, next comes new business. And the only item we have there is the sewer system management plan. And we'll let Mike Randall will take over.
Hello again. We're here to present the two more sections of the SSMP, which is the Sanitary Sewer Management Plan for the city of Morro Bay. We're kind of in the home stretch here. We got most of the big heavy-hitting sections out of the way, and you guys have already reviewed them, and they were taken to council last month and were adopted, or at least approved. We'll be adopting the whole document once these last sections are done. So we have two that we're going to present to you guys this evening, which is the design and performance provisions section, which is element 5, and the communication program, which is element 11. So those are the two sections that we are presenting tonight, and we have three more that will come back to you most likely at your next PWEB meeting next month. We should have those completed. We're going to give it a shot and see if we can get it pushed through to the end here. So for element 5, we were required to kind of show that we have design standards for construction and design of our sewer system. These are contained. A lot of this information was actually previously provided in the legal authority section of this document, which went into how we have the legal authority to implement construction within the right-of-way and enforcing construction standards for our sewer system. So in this section, we refer to both the design standards, which is the standard drawings and specifications that the engineering department holds and maintains, as well as the city's municipal code. Those three documents together basically allow us to have design standards and provisions for doing design for sewer mains, as well as construction of private laterals that connect to our sewer system. So that gets us through that first step, which was the design stage, and then performance. We had to show that through our municipal code mainly is what gives us the performance aspect of the sewer system. So that's how we can set limits on maintaining quality control pretty much on the design standards to say we have certain slopes for our design process as well as diameters for different size pipes. So when we're doing these different projects to either increase capacity of our system where capacity may be below what's now required, or if we're rehabbing a section of sewer line, so say sewer lines in mediocre or in need of rehabilitation, we go through design stages and we follow a process in order to rehabilitate that sewer main. The other part, which is element 11, is our communication program. So we were required to state how we communicate both through the SSMP approval as well as with satellite agencies after or during our operation of our sewer system. So I'm going to start with going over the communication program that we took to develop the SSMP, and you guys are somewhat familiar with that because we've been bringing it to you at these PWEB meetings. So through PWEB, the televised presentations at PWEB and at City Council, the public's been given a chance to review the sections as they've come out, provide comments at the City Council meeting, and once the document is finally completed, it will be put out for review to the public after final adoption. Once we implement the elements of this document into our operation plan for the sewer system, which we've actually been doing as we've been preparing the document, so it's kind of a living, breathing document. As we get a section completed, we try and implement the items that we've laid out in that element into practice, both in the field and in the office for design and planning. So we're going to be posting updates both on our website, in the newsletter that goes out with the water bills, as well as council has suggested we do mailings to addresses so that people that don't receive a water bill also get the information, and through a state of the sewer address to city council, which happens approximately once a year. So those are our communication programs for the SSMP process, and every 2 years we're required to review this document and make any updates that are necessary to it. So if things have changed or we found areas where we'd like to maybe broaden this document to cover something else, or if new requirements possibly come out from the state, we'll be incorporating those into the SSMP through this process. The other half of the communication program is discussion and communication with satellite agencies. So those are agencies that operate outside the city or are larger systems. So we have a few that are listed in there that we consider to be tributary to our system, which is the high school, state parks, and some of the trailer parks we also see as that. So we may want to keep the channels of communication open with them so that if they have a problem, say they have a spill or they end up dumping something down the storm drain that could affect the treatment plant or the collection system, we want to be in open communication with them so that we can solve the problem together and not just point fingers at whose fault the problem is until we get it solved. So we keep an open communication with them. They have our contact information. We have their contact information, as well as organizations that we produce discharges that are of concern sometimes to the sewer system. We make sure that though that communication is there, as well as with the communication to report spills, which was covered in a previous section of the SSMP as well, which was the overflow emergency response plan. And then the other aspect we tied in here was the satellite agency of the Cayucas Sanitary District. They cooperate with us, the wastewater treatment plant, and own through the JPA agreement, which is the joint powers agreement between the CSD and the city of Morro Bay. So they are a satellite system in that they dump their sanitary sewer waste into our collection system and then goes through a joint line to the treatment plant. So they've been listed there. We have meetings with them through the agreement on a regular basis to discuss issues as they arise and to present things for approval and discussion. And after all that quick run-through, we are here to answer any questions you have about the sections or anything in general.
Mike, I have a question concerning the Cayugas Sanitary District. Given that a lot of their effluent or what wastewater comes into our system, and Morro Bay has to be versed on, like the lift station that just happened over the weekend, does Morro Bay train with Cayugas somehow to mitigate these events if they come up? I know that you're saying that they communicate, but is there a flow chart of communication, and do we test that out?
It's correct. So we share a trunk line. The North Main trunk line is a shared facility.
Was that trunk line, when Cayugas upgraded their facilities, was that trunk line upgraded also?
The shared facility has not been upgraded. So that's that's probably our third or fourth project that we want to get to, our major project in wastewater collections that we want to get to, is upgrading that line. So that is a shared facility that hasn't been upgraded in recent memory.
When you say facility, you mean the pipe that brings it into Morro Bay from Cayucas?
Yeah, it's a pipe. Mm-hmm. So they have two pressurized lines that come in, and they dump into the gravity line that runs down Main Street. And we use that gravity line as well. The neighborhood lines kind of tie into that.
And that's mutually owned?
Mutually owned.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about how you determine a school or a location. Is it considered a satellite? I know, I believe the state park is out of the city jurisdiction. I didn't think the high school was, nor was I aware of Bayshore Villages. So how, and I noticed that the elementary school is not included there. So how do you determine which of these locations is considered a satellite and needs, you know, this extra attention?
Yeah, that was kind of our question, too, while we were going through this process, is to the state we asked, okay, what are you defining a satellite agency as? And they're like, well, we'll get back to you. So what we found in a written document is that it's any group or large group agency that operates that isn't the municipality or the owner of the collection system that has more than a mile of operable sewer line. So that would qualify a good number of things, and we're thinking that, you know, the high school has probably well over a mile of sewer pipe that goes down into their facilities, and so that's kind of where we've left that portion, and the wording in here that these agencies discharge to the wastewater collection system, and we consider them to be satellite agencies to us. The state may not be considering them as satellite agencies, but because they don't own the treatment facility. So that's kind of where the state has given us a requirement, and a definition for a term, and we've had to come in and go, okay, well, does this fall underneath that category or does it not? So we're considering them as satellite agencies for our communication program so that we keep an open communication with them and make sure that they keep in contact with us as things arise, so that if there is a problem on their property, we don't just leave them out to dry, or we're there to respond to help them.
So are basically those three organizations the only three that qualify under that greater than 1 mile of line?
That we're considering, yeah, for the SSMP submittal. Those are the ones that fit that requirement.
Oh, okay.
From the state.
Thank you.
Anybody?
I have a question. On here it says that they will maintain their structural integrity for the duration of their intended service lives. How long is that?
It depends on what you're talking about. So different parts of our system have different expected lives during designs. When you're going through the design process, you're sitting there going, okay, I have a certain amount of money that I'm able to spend on this project, or maybe I have an unlimited amount of funds, which doesn't happen too often, and you have to go, how long do I want this piece of infrastructure to last before I have to come back and replace it? So a lot of times for sewer purposes, that's in the past, that's been a 50-year lifespan, and we've been trying, you know, some of our sewer pipe is over that 50-year limit, and that's when you start monitoring it, checking to make sure that it's in the condition you expect it's in. So you have to keep an eye on it once it gets towards that. It's reached its useful life is the term that we've adopted and used in the document and other spots as well. So that's when you start monitoring it, making sure that it is performing to the level of standard that you need it to facilitate the system as a whole. And you keep an eye on it, and then when you have problems, you can expect them to increase, as Dylan was talking about earlier with the lift stations. It's like they have a design life. When you start getting close to that design life, you know, operating and maintaining those facilities starts costing more money, and that's when you need to have preparation to replace those facilities so that when they do fail or prior to failure, you're able to replace them to prevent those problems from occurring.
Thank you.
Do we have many lines that are beyond the 50-year time frame?
We have a lot that we're... There are lines that were placed back before the city was incorporated, and that's what we're going through now. As part of the SSMP, it's been officialized on how we're doing our videoing. So we're going to go through the system. We're going to try and do the whole system, video inspection every 5 years. And that'll allow us to have basically the longest that a line will go without being videoed would be about 5 years. And so we'll have a video record of the condition of our pipe, and we'll be able to then manage our replacement projects and rehabilitation projects. So right now we're going through the sewer system in a systematic approach to find where our areas are that we do have spots that are eligible for repair, rehabilitation. We're getting those. So those we can't do at this point with the crew that we have. I mean, if we're sitting there and we have our four collection workers working on this project and we get a call that lift station 3 died, there's no way for them to respond. I mean, we'd be putting plates over what we'd been doing on the construction and just leaving open holes, and that leaves the city in somewhat of a liability standpoint. So for now, we're going to be putting these out to bid for construction, and we might get to a point later on where we're able to do more and more of these projects in-house, and that will save us money.
Well, as I understand it, we have 3 lift stations, but we have this satellite out there, the trailer park in North Morro Bay. That must require a lift pump, doesn't it?
Yeah, that trailer park is actually part, it plumbs into lift station 3, as I believe, and pumps up through. Is that correct, Dylan?
In North Morro Bay? We have the state park has a facility there. And the state park has a lift station.
That's
correct, but that's a private facility.
That's the private lift station, not the city.
Yeah. So the way that the satellite agencies work is as if they have more than a mile of line, but we also run into the issue if they're a superior state agency to us. So if I go to the state of California and say, hey, I don't think you should do this. If I go to Caltrans and say, I don't like what you've done with Highway 1 running through Morro Bay, they just laugh at us. I mean, they basically tell us to go away. And so if they're a superior state agency, we define them as a satellite agency because we don't have the ability to basically enforce our codes over them. They're exempt from us or they're superior to us. And so you go, that's state parks. The northern state park probably doesn't have a mile of line. but we lumped them together for that purpose.
What about the high school? Is it considered, because it is it a state institution? And so is it considered a higher authority?
The school district, I'm not sure that they would be considered a higher authority. But in that case, they do have the facilities such that if there was a spill out of their main, because they have facilities that kind of turn in, run down the driveway, turn, and then branch out to all of their different buildings. So they have more than a mile of facilities. So that's how that they wound up in there. And we don't maintain or operate those facilities. So it's important for them to know, as it's important for us to know, sort of where we all draw the lines, so that there's not a facility that's not getting maintained. So you don't find out about it, you know, when there's a spill and you have parties arguing over whose facility that is. We want the lines to be very clearly drawn, that this is where our facilities start, that's where our facilities end, so that these other agencies can take care of their facilities and we'll take care of ours.
So how does that work with the elementary school? Is it, are they taking care of their own sewer facilities on that property, or are they treated like the high school is?
They would take care of their own facilities on their property, and then where they connect to the main, from the main on out, we would take care of.
And so there is clear about the jurisdiction issues as the high school is, even though they're not listed here with the high school.
Their facilities are less complicated than the high school's.
But they are considered a satellite along with the high school?
Correct. But for the purposes of this, it's really where you have mains and major sort of discharges into your system. And so you go with the high school, it's important to us because they have a trunk line that runs down through the high school with manholes in it and everything else, so it looks like a sewer main. It's important for them to know that our crews don't maintain those facilities. The elementary school doesn't have that. It's more akin to a residential plumbing installation, or a smaller lateral comes in and ties in. So it's a slightly different beast. So we weren't worried about defining them as a satellite agency because there isn't that type of facility that would cause confusion.
So do they maintain their lines on the property at the elementary school, or is that city?
I don't know. The city doesn't.
The city does?
It would be. It does not.
Oh, it does not.
It's on private property. So you go, we wouldn't maintain those facilities. They would. And if whether they do or don't, you know, I can't answer to that.
And you don't have any way of communicating with them like you do the high school. There isn't an avenue of dialogue or anything?
We haven't had the need to because there aren't the types of facilities that we would be.
Because the volume is so much less?
The volume's different and the facilities are different. So there's not going to be confusion there about what's their lateral versus what's our main. Whereas with the high school, it's not such a clear-cut case.
I have a question about you make a point that I guess I didn't consider about the state park having its own lift station back there. That would probably take the wastewater from the golf course and the campground and the marina. What sort of, in terms of the joint powers you guys are talking about with this sanitary sewer management plan, what happens if the city finds out that their lift stations isn't
in the past? And we are not responsible for those, nor are we liable for those. So it's the superior state agency, and they have to answer to the functioning of their facilities.
I guess, okay, then that makes me think of where does our trunk line and theirs meet? Right there at the gate there by the Inetmaro Bay?
It's, it's about there.
Right in that archway?
Yeah, right about at the archway. And so you go, we have a manhole that they dump into. Now, where we can get at them is if they started to discharge something. So if they had an illicit discharge, let's say they were putting a poisonous chemical and it was killing all the bugs in our wastewater treatment plant, then we would have recourse against them, and we could shut off their flow. But what we don't have control over is their operation of their internal facilities.
Is everyone satisfied? Then I will entertain a motion that we approve this and pass it on to the City Council.
So moved.
Have a second?
I second it.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That takes care of that. And we have no old business. So we have future agenda items. Yes.
I just wondered what happened to the minutes and when I'll be able to get a hold of those. Since I wasn't here, I would like to see them from last month.
So we'll bring,
until then.
So we will certainly have them sometime before the next meeting.
Well, that's great, but that's 2 months after the meeting.
Correct.
So what happened? I'm curious.
I think we just got overloaded on our end, I think is what happened. So we just slipped that one, which doesn't happen very often, but it does occasionally. We get lots of other things rolling around and don't get to it.
Okay, well, it's appreciated when it is there.
Correct.
Okay. We're back to future agenda items. Now, I noticed that we have on the list San Jacinto intersection discussion that Matt brought up. Can we do that next month?
Sure. I think that's enough time. Rob probably will lead the discussion on that. So let me defer to him and make sure that he's okay with that. If he is, we'll put it on the agenda. If not, then it'll just be the next section of the SSMP.
And then we have a continuing on the sewer system management plan. So those items would about fill out next meeting if unless there's something more important. And do we have anyone else to add?
Well, yes, I would like to, Dylan, and when you talk to Rob, in terms of the San Jacinto intersection discussion, I know I've been talked to by a number of people in the neighborhood there, and I know the city already has signage up and stripage across the street. I guess what the neighborhood is looking for, especially during the school year, is, and I don't want to talk about it now, but just you guys can think about it, is what can we do, what can the city do in terms of putting any kind of, not speed bumps, but those little vibrator things down on the, something to tell people to slow down. I don't know. Some stuff like that.
Yeah, the Brown Act prohibits us to go about any farther than that. Okay, so that's anything else then?
I noticed also listed under future agenda items was helpful information at Public Works.
Which one?
The third item under future agenda items.
Oh, helpful information.
At Public Works, so I didn't know what that was about, and I did have an idea of...
Is that yours?
That was something I brought up. And I was commenting that when I go into the offices, there are a lot of helpful bulletins about construction, and I wanted us to stay as up to date as we could about green building and all of the initiatives and any incentives. And I think City Council was to address that on Monday, and I don't know what happened with that. They were trying to establish financial incentives in the city of Morroway for I don't know. Do you know more about that?
Yeah, I can comment on that.
Can we get that on the next meeting, too? We probably have time.
Let me... Well, I don't want to overcommit. I don't want to commit for other staff members.
Okay. Well,
but
if we don't get it next time, we'll get it the following meeting.
Yeah,
anyway.
Let's add that as a future agenda item, though, is that you want some update on the green building efforts.
Yeah. Okay.
I also had an idea that I thought might be worth discussing at this forum, but I wanted to see if other people were interested. I was having a problem with my, you know, what the typical number of units are that you should be using at your house if you're not wasting any water, but I certainly wasn't aware. It doesn't say how many gallons per day or gallons per month. It just says units, and which really didn't mean anything to me, but it does now because I know we have an issue. We need to take care of it at our house, but I really wasn't educated well enough on that. So I thought that might be something useful to have here. Would you?
I totally agree. I don't think we can educate ourselves enough about water conservation, and it's only going to be an issue that continues. And people just don't have knowledge about what is good consumption or, you know, and if we are forced to cut back or pay more for water, which we very well could be, we need to know, you know, how we can conserve in areas where we can conserve. And
well, you know, we have this Water Bill Review Board, which I am a member of and have been for since quite a while. And this morning we had our meeting, but our monthly meeting. But very often we have cases in which we can tell from the pattern of water use that they've had a leak for a long time and wonder why they didn't correct it. But I usually make it a point to get on the phone and talk to people. And I know there was somebody recently who's living alone whose usual water consumption was 13 to 18 units a month. Well, you know, where's it going? You know, and but we can go into that if you.
I think it might be helpful information for the general public. I also thought, you know, it might be something good to put in the utilities letter that goes out with a sewer bill. Just, you know, average use for a family of four with or without irrigation, maybe, you know. And please contact us if you notice that you're way beyond what the average is. And maybe we can help give you some pointers on, you know, where your leaks might be occurring and how to remedy them. I think that would be...
I really like that idea. So I can guarantee you that you'll see a future newsletter that has residential leak detection. We actually have been in the process, Mike and I talked about it again today, where there are conservation kits that we're looking at purchasing and making available to homeowners that have leak detection tablets in there. So you can tell if your toilet's leaking or not. And then we would do... But I like the idea. So I think there's a very good chance we'll put together a newsletter on residential leak detection. What do you do if you think you have a leak? What are some signs you might have a leak?
Right. I think a crucial piece of information is what a typical family of two or four would use in a month. And are you way beyond that? Then maybe you need to pay attention to what's going on. Great. Thank you. Be great.
And also, I think that's a great idea, June, but an interpretation of the units, too. Like, what's one unit equal in terms of gallons? Because that might educate them further also.
Put that on for a future agenda item? No?
Maybe, you know, if we don't have room next month, because we have a lot of the sewer plan to go over and finish, then, you know, this is something that maybe could wait a month or two, but... It would be nice, and maybe, you know, I'll call Bonnie, actually, and ask her if she'd be willing to come in, or if...
I won't commit Bonnie, but certainly we can do that.
Okay. If anybody's watching right now, I made one simple phone call and got a lot of good information in a very short amount of time from Bonnie on the phone about these issues.
Yeah, you bet. If you're listening to this and you have a leak or suspect you have a leak, give us a call. Our staff is very friendly. We still kind of have a small town staff, and it's important to them that they do a good job and that you think that they do a good job. And so if you have a problem, you suspect you have a leak, it's not uncommon for our guys to spend a few minutes with you and give you some good pointers and to help you out. They'll come, you know, show you where your meter is and how to read it and, you know, some signals that you can tell if it's leaking. Go out in the middle of the night when nothing's on and look and see if your meter's spinning. I mean, you know, that's something that an average person might not know how to do, and our guys would happily show you how to do that.
So who do we call?
I spoke with Bonnie, and she was excellent resource on the telephone.
Bonnie's the billing clerk, and you can call Bonnie, and then also you can call Public Services, which is 772-6261, if you suspect that there's a problem with your water.
Well, we won't have to bring Bonnie in overtime, because I have all the information.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and I wouldn't commit any specific resource, but that's also an exercise that either Mike or myself could put together. Or Bill, sounds like. So
maybe a future...
Yeah, so certainly a month or two we can get it on the agenda. You get it.
Well, summer's coming up, so the sooner we can do it feasibly...
Like sprinkler systems. The electric valves stick open, primarily because they aren't good enough. You know, you can't build a reliable valve at the price those are sold for. And as a result, they're designed to fail and run up a big water bill for you. Now, you can buy a better valve.
I think we don't want to get too far afield on this, but I think those are all good suggestions to get And that is a great kind of point, is that you look at your bill, you know, start there and look at how many units you're using, and then just glance at it occasionally, but yeah, or look at the dollar amount and pay attention to that, because it certainly will tell you. And it is easy to have a leak underground that can run for a while, and if you're not paying attention, you won't catch it, and it will waste water and it will cost you.
Well, I know my bill had gone up a little bit, but I also know that rates had gone up, so that's what I had attributed it to. But I was wrong, and it was a leak that gradually got worse over time.
Yeah, and water rates have not changed.
Yeah.
And they haven't changed in about 15 years here. So we haven't changed water rates. What has changed are sewer rates. So your water bill portion shouldn't be changed. Those rates have not gone up.
Well, the water rates we use are established in 1995. Still the same rate. Okay, anything else? If not, we're adjourned.
You sure about that, Billy?